has been doing with respect to Russia, of how Russia is actually being pushed into perhaps China's side, but how at the same time Ken brings about the question how Russia, whether Russia can actually lose the EU as a trading partner. We'll also examine the U.S. role in the way that it's demonized Russia to stop a close EU trade link with Russia.
Vladimir Putin unmasked. Shock claim Kremlin will do anything to break up the EU. Headlines similar to this have made the rounds in the news. But why would the Russian President Vladimir Putin want the breakup of the EU? Take this entry by the BBC, which paints a picture that Vladimir Putin is using hybrid warfare to destabilize Europe.
Is Vladimir Putin using hybrid warfare to destabilize the EU? Hybrid warfare can refer to any form of aggression short of open invasion.
From the perspective of the EU, what they are fundamentally worried about is the breakdown of what used to be called the unipolar world. So a world where the United States was overwhelmingly hegemonic, both in economic and military terms, and likewise its allies, like the European Union bloc, were, you know, the only show in town when it came to global geopolitics.
To clarify matters, Russia has said that it wants closer ties with friendly EU states. But when it comes to the EU and Russia, it's all about trade. On the one hand, Russia does not want to be bound to the EU's bloc's trading rules. Yet it does want to trade with EU countries where its interests are concerned. But it is the US that has played a factor in forming an anti-Russia stance, dragging the EU along with it. The perfect opportunity presented itself with the 2014 Russian annexation of Crimea and Moscow's role in the conflict in eastern Ukraine.
Back with me in the studio is Mohan Abedin and Mark Sloboda. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Mark Sloboda, Russia not too keen on the European Union. It has said that it is part of the Eurasian Economic Union at the same time, which may be somewhat of a competition. The prospect of closer ties, however, between Moscow and Beijing has worried many analysts in the U.S. and also the EU. A new poll has found Russians are far more actually upbeat about their eastern neighbors than those to their west. Is Russia more gravitated economically, you think, to the east, or does it want to find a fine balance between the two when it comes to trade?
Yeah, so I think that requires some specification. Russia, I agree, is not keen on the EU as an institution, but it still is trying and hopes for better relations with the individual member states of Europe that are part of the EU. You know, principally Germany, France, you know, but others as well. And China is still Russia's largest state trading partner by a significant amount, with trade in the last year between the two totaling some $50 billion in U.S. dollar terms. But collectively, if you view the countries of Europe as one within the EU, then that biggest trading partner would still be the EU. So Russia still does do significant trade with the EU and its members, and is loath to see these relations further damaged, particularly on economic terms.
Well, it appears that there is a difference here in the figures that has been presented. It is now said that Russia, Mohan, is actually doing more trade with China, upwards to around $100 billion is what is projected for this current year that we're in. So that would put China to be the number one partner. However, let's take a look at the foreign policy of the EU and the West. I don't know if you agree with this, in particular when I say West, the U.S., whether that has prevented from the two forging ties with Russia. In other words, you have the EU and the U.S. maybe on one side, and since they are aligned, so to speak, when it comes to their approach to Russia, that perhaps then that together combined, they may be then imposing restrictions, i.e. sanctions, onto Russia. Do you think there's an alignment there, and this China-Russia alliance, do you think, will further then be forged closer as you get the U.S. and the EU on one corner?
Yeah, but first of all, On the issue of trade, you're right, China is a huge trading partner for Russia, but the quality of trade is important too. It's Russia's energy supplies, its gas, for instance, is mostly going to the EU, and that's very, very important.
Thanks to both Mohan and Mark Sloboda. Right now, we're about to take a short break here on Economic Divide. Welcome back to Economic Divide with me, Kavatapwai. Time now to take a look at some of the other economic headlines hitting the front pages in our info news section. Now, this piece of news got our attention first. Farmers and rights group boycott food summit over big business links. The focus said it was on agro-business rather than ecology, which is split groups invited to the planned UN conference on hunger. One of the big businesses, for example, is funded by Bill Gates. The farmers don't want things like precision agriculture, data collection, and genetic engineering to be executed in their farming practices, because that could hurt their bottom line. Now, moving on to news related to COVID, this got our attention. Drug lobby asking Biden to punish foreign countries who are pushing for low-cost vaccines. Now, Big Pharma is fighting for tight control over the COVID-19 vaccine production. In turn, it limits availability worldwide while reaping billions. Well, this definitely doesn't sound fair for the poorer countries that can't afford the high price of the vaccine, which would prolong the disease and thus negatively affect their economies. Okay, the U.S. recently passed the $1.9 trillion stimulus package. Well, that may sound good, but there are several drawbacks. I mean, if you're 25, for example, the new plan will strap you with $1,750 in annual interest by the time you reach 35. In terms of the U.S. debt, although it surged by $7 trillion under Trump, as you can see over here, it's going to go much higher under Biden. The national U.S. debt before the stimulus stood at $27.9 trillion. And finally, what is going on with the oil prices? Well, it seems that global oil demand is set to benefit from stronger economic recovery and vaccinations in the second half of this year. That's according to OPEC, of course. As OPEC goes, production has been cut, which drives up the prices. Currently, the price of Brent crude is almost $70 a barrel, which is quite amazing when you think that less than a year ago, oil prices fell below zero. Okay, time now to take a look at our final report of the show, which looks at the ways that China and Russia have aligned themselves to the point where it is highly inconceivable how the U.S. can actually catch up to these two superpowers.
The Chinese President Xi Jinping and the Russian President Vladimir Putin have put economics at the center of their strategic partnership, a key pillar of their relationship. The relationship has reached a point that each has called each other the most important economic partner. Multiple projects in the pipeline, literally. Take this gas project, which connects Russia to China.
I think this is a major concern for the European Union and the West. What they are concerned about is the rise of China, which has been a major focus of Western discontent during the pandemic period, and the decline of what was once called the unipolar world, that is the United States, its massive economic and military and diplomatic influence in the world, also bolstered, of course, by its allies in the European Union, principally in Britain and so forth. So I think that they are worried that iron grip is loosening under the conditions of the pandemic.
Moscow and Beijing have also gone ahead to use their own national currencies more often in trade, as Russia's relations with the West deteriorate even further. The Russian president has also repeated how the role of the dollar should be revisited in global trade. Even Xi and Putin's signature economic visions appear complementary at first glance. Xi's Belt and Road Initiative has unleashed Chinese companies to build roads, railways, fiber optic cables, and other hard infrastructures across the Eurasian supercontinent and beyond.
Everyone's heard of the European Union, but what you may not know is that the largest economic union in the world, geographically at least, is actually right next door.
Meanwhile, Putin's Eurasian Economic Union harmonizes customs processes to create a single market among Russia, Armenia, Belarus, Kazakhstan, and Kyrgyzstan. And none of this comes as a surprise. The U.S. under the former President Trump targeted China in a trade war. Washington and Russia were also placed under Western sanctions.
And they are probably worried that Russia might grow closer to China at a time when China, of course, is really the rising power across Asia. So Russia has, you know, economic interests east and west. What they're worried about is the balance in that influence, and that Russia will become a more serious competitor to the European Union and the West. This is what's haunting them. It's not a serious concern for the democratic rights of the Russian people.
I'm pleased to welcome back one more time current affairs and impact analysts Mahan Abedin and Mark Sloboda. Okay, Mark, final question to you. Russia's economic ties with China have elevated both to such a level that some are saying that it may prevent the U.S.'s economic advancement. Particularly, we can look at the way that Russia has advanced. This way may be pushing the U.S. down the economic ladder. I mean, we have seen how China is set to overtake the U.S. economy by the year 2034, which was revised to 2028. Do you think resource-rich Russia and China together will be able to actually do that?
Yeah, so first of all, I mean, this has been a geo-economic truth for decades now, that the neoliberal global economic architecture that the U.S. has set up over the decades, beginning with Bretton Woods all the way up to the last successful rounds of the World Trade Organization, the creation of the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, and the World Bank, and other ways that the U.S. Has leverage over the global financial system. This has actually resulted through the processes of globalization and capital seeking cheaper labor for production in a global shift in wealth and economic power away from the United States and towards the East, in particular China and more generally in Asia.
Mahan Abedin, current affairs and impact analyst, thank you so much for your thoughts.
You're welcome.
Taking a look at trade between the EU and Russia. As an example, January through March 2020, the turnover between Russia and the European Union decreased by 10.1% year on year, which was down to 52.3 billion euros. This table over here shows the first quarter of each year from the year 2018, moving on to 2019 and 2020. This here are the trade flows going from the EU to the Russian Federation, and over there from the Russian Federation or Russia to the EU. Now, your countries, well, they had an increase by 4.6% in Q1 2020, which made for about 20.6 billion euros. Exports from Russia to the EU declining by 17.7%, which is down to 31.7 billion euros. Bad news then, right? Wrong. This is actually what has happened. Now, 5 years ago, the Russian economy was teetering on the brink. Following Moscow's invasion and the annexation of Crimea in March 2014, Western countries imposed powerful economic sanctions on Russia, which, coupled with a steep decline in the price of oil, could have brought the Kremlin to its knees. Let's move on to the next graph so we can talk about it. Here, this is from the Financial Times. By many metrics, Russia's $1.7 trillion economy looks to be actually in a better shape today than it has done for quite some time. Growth is slower, but more stable. A $124 billion sovereign fund has actually been created. Exporters have found new markets, and importers have found domestic alternatives. So much for Western sanctions and their intended goal, which has fallen short again. For Russia, the decline of Europe and the rise of Asia presents a historical opportunity. After COVID-19, the U.S. has seen that it's, well, moving downward in its economic output. And then you have the EU that's struggling, its member countries really struggling economically in terms of their GDP output. In that respect, one wonders whether they even grew out of the European debt crisis. Why would Russia want to deal then with the US and the EU as the US continues to sanction it along with the EU? Well, it has the opportunity to partner up with the economic powerhouse to soon take the economic reins away from the US, namely China. The East is further progressing, as it was evident with the formation of its biggest trading bloc in the world, namely the RCEP. That was 8 years in the making. Some of the countries included there were South Korea, China, Australia, and of course, we could take a look at other Southeast Asian countries. So it seems like the economies of the East is where Russia would benefit most, though it may still want to have minimal trade with some of the European countries that are willing to trade with Russia and not worry about the sanctions that have been imposed on it both by the EU and the US. Well, that does it for this edition of Economic Divide. We always enjoy having you on this program. From Mikhail Vitalyev, the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Nasiri. Stay tuned. Having trust in Allah has different meanings. In a verse of the Holy Quran, we read, believers are those who have trust in Allah. This ayah means that true believers have only trust in Allah and no one else. Their only reference is Allah, and all they have is Allah. It is mentioned in the Holy Quran that Allah is the very first and the very last. He is the very exterior and the very interior.
در روی این کره زمین کسی که شما رو بیش از همه دوست داشته باشد خدا.
Allah is the best entity that can take care of your worldly affairs. The love of Allah is different from the love of others. Allah loves His servants only for the sake of them, whereas others love each other only for their own desires. He does not expect you anything, and He does not need your help. He is rich in nature, and His power is rooted in His nature. That's why the Muslims must go only to His door and ask only Him their wants and needs. Therefore, keep in mind that Allah loves you because of yourself, because He has no desire to be achieved through loving you. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Nasiri. Please do log into our website, which is parsetoday.com. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, send an email to englishradio@irib.ir. Until next time, God bless you all, and may Allah be with you.
Felicitations at the beginning of a new Iranian year, Nowruz. Congratulations to everyone at the start of spring and revival of nature. According to a United Nations World Food Program WF report, COVID-19 might have left up to 265 million people with acute food shortages in 2020. We have prepared an article for you in this regard, written by Robin Scher, writer. This article is published under the heading, Pandemic may have left 265 million people with acute food shortages in 2020. Here's more. According to a United Nations World Food Program report, COVID-19 might have left up to 265 million people with acute food shortages in 2020. The combined effect of the pandemic as well as the emerging global recession could, without large-scale coordinated action, disrupt the functioning of food systems, which would result in consequences for health and nutrition of a severity and a scale unseen for more than half a century, states another UN report. In the United States, food insecurity has doubled overall and tripled among households with children due to the pandemic, states a June 2020 report by the Institute for Policy Research, IPR, at Northwestern University, which relied on data provided by the U.S. Census Bureau's Household Pulse Survey. In a recent interview with CBS News, IPR Director Dionne Whitmore warned that these statistics would likely continue to hold, with the numbers indicating particularly dramatic rises in food insecurity among Black and Latino families. Indeed, families of color are being disproportionately impacted. According to an analysis of new census data by the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, CBPP, 22% of Black and 21% of Latino respondents reported not having enough to eat, compared to just 9% with white people. Globally, the effects of COVID-19 on food security are equally, if not more, severe. According to a CBS News report, WFP Director David Beasley told the UN Security Council in April 2020 that the world is on the brink of a hunger pandemic. He added, "In a worst-case scenario, we could be looking at famine in about 36 countries. And in fact, in 10 of these countries, we already have more than 1 million people per country who are on the verge of starvation." The number of chronically hungry people increased by an estimated 130 million last year to more than 800 million, about eight times the total number of COVID-19 cases to date, wrote Mark Lowcock, the Under Secretary General and Emergency Relief Coordinator at the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, and Alex Van Trottenberg, Managing Director of Operations at the World Bank. Countries affected by conflict and climate change are particularly vulnerable to food insecurity. Empty stomachs can stunt whole generations. The U.S. Department of Agriculture, USDA, warns that climate change is likely to diminish continued progress on global food security through production disruptions that lead to local availability limitations and price increases, interrupted transport conduits, and diminished food safety. The same might be said about the pandemic, which has made it abundantly clear. Climate resilience, food security, and global health are closely intertwined. In terms of food security, another major concern is the pandemic-related school closures that have occurred across the globe, with UNICEF reporting that more than 1.6 billion children and young people have been affected. Schools provide a food lifeline for children. For so many, that is where they get their only nutritious meal of the day. In January, UNICEF and WFP released a new report that found that more than 39 billion in school meals have been missed worldwide since the pandemic began, with 370 million children worldwide having missed 40% of in-school meals. In early 2020, when COVID-19 was still a looming specter rather than the deadly virus we are more familiar with today, the threat of food insecurity was a practical problem. Scenes of shoppers descending on aisles to stock up on supplies was a common sight. As CNN reported in March 2020, supermarkets around the world rationed food and other products such as toilet paper and cleaning supplies in an effort to curb stockpiling. We'll be right back. In Vermont, for instance, a steady increase in food insecurity since the start of the pandemic has correlated to employment levels, according to a survey conducted by the University of Vermont between March and April 2020. Approximately 45% of respondents had either lost their jobs, been furloughed, or had their hours reduced during the pandemic. And a further two-thirds of survey participants who recorded scarcity of food in their households had experienced job losses or work disruptions since the outbreak of the pandemic, according to the survey. Vermont is just one example. The impact has been felt across the U.S. during the week before Thanksgiving last year. The Guardian reported that 5.6 million U.S. households struggled to put enough food on the table, while referring to the analysis of the census data by CBPP. As the pandemic continues to upend lives across the world, it has impacted the entire food supply chain, with factory and supermarket workers being highly susceptible to COVID-19. There has been a commitment decline in food production and a rise in prices. As Scott Faber, Senior Vice President of Government Affairs at Environmental Working Group, EWG, reported, farmers across the U.S. were already facing labor shortages prior to the pandemic. And with tightened immigration as well as the heightened risk and poor compensation associated with these jobs, food processors and farm labor contractors may struggle to find other workers willing to risk their lives to work in meat plants, packing sheds, or produce fields. The pandemic has exposed the weakness of the industrialized global food system, which depends on long, complex transportation chains and cross-border travel. The monstrous and unsustainable food industry known as Big Ag relies on the horrendous treatment of laborers, a wasteful allocation of resources, worldwide environmental devastation, and in a pinch, can quickly devolve into near collapse of the entire system, as evidenced by the delays, shortages, and pressure during the COVID-19 pandemic and the deepening hunger crisis in America. April M. Short, a fellow at the Independent Media Institute, recently wrote in Salon, "Among the many necessary systematic changes, 2020 has illuminated the need to majorly restructure the way we cultivate and access food in our communities. It didn't take the pandemic to reveal the inefficiency and injustice of the food system. Globally, a third of all food is wasted, while nearly 690 million people were undernourished in 2019, almost 60 million more people than in 2014. But the pandemic has underscored matter. According to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, the number of acutely food insecure people could increase to 270 million due to COVID-19. Representing an 82% increase compared to the number of acutely food insecure people pre-COVID-19. And the disruption of transportation has shown that the long distances it normally takes for food to get from one place to another can be a serious liability during a crisis. Food banks are under tremendous pressure to meet the skyrocketing demand, wrote Claire Bainbow Fonaut, Feeding America CEO, and Zippy Duval, president of the American Farm Bureau, to then Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue in April of last year. At the same time, however, we are seeing literally tons of agricultural goods being discarded because of the shutdown of so much of the economy. Consumer demand has shifted from eating out at restaurants and food services away from home, and food supply chain operations have had to be retooled. and that impact has been felt within the transportation sector. Forbes reported that Andrew Novowick, an agricultural economist at Cornell University, points to a number of weak spots in the food transportation system that could be aggravated by the increased demand for food. A shortage of truck drivers is one potential weak spot, says Novowick. Although he concedes there is debate on this matter, he maintains that trucking companies are finding it much harder to recruit those long-haul drivers. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, OECD, an intergovernmental economic group with 37 member countries, said that the pandemic has laid bare pre-existing gaps in social protection systems in a report published in June 2020. While the impacts of COVID-19 are still unfolding, experience so far shows the importance of an open and predictable international trade environment to ensure food can move to where it is needed, the OECD report states. The biggest risk for food security is not with food availability, but with consumers' access to food. Safety nets are essential to avoid an increase in hunger and food insecurity. And our problem is the lack of media coverage about the food insecurity being witnessed around the world, particularly during the COVID-19 era. As The Economist recently pointed out, journalists in 2020 wrote more than 50,000 articles about the canceled Eurovision contest, but only around 2,000 about drought and hunger in Zambia.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pit.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
By the first verse of the Holy Quran,
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Allah will bless you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Protect you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Help you.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
So ask His blessings.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His protection.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
His help.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, boys and girls, other life forms, welcome to today's episode of Youth Station, only from IRIB English Radio. I am your humble host.
Assalamu alaikum. I'm Abu Muhammad, your co-host.
Yes, by
yes,
the way,
is
I'm
that
saying
what I am?
Right. Bro, there is a verse in the Holy Quran. It you know what? Actually, it's one of my most favorite verses in the
Go
Quran.
Go for it. Say it.
أَتَجْعَلُ فِيهَا مَا يَفْسِدُ فِيهَا وَيَسْفِكُ الدِّمَاءَ وَنَحْنُ نُسَبِّحُ بِحَمْدِكَ وَنُقَدِّسُ لَكَ.
There you go. You'll have to translate that for, okay, for
it's
me.
It's one of my absolute favorite verses in the Quran. And the angels, when Allah tells them that I am creating mankind as my vicegerents, my representatives, my khalifa on earth, they be like, but are you putting on earth those who will commit nothing but corruption and bloodshed while we are already praising and glorifying you? And God is like, oh no, nah, I know something that you don't, right? That's not how God said it, but still.
Yeah, that's not how He said it, but if you look at it like that, it's a good verse, yeah.
It is, right? Because, yeah. You're like 10, 10, 10, 10. Is that what human beings do? The angels knew this from the beginning? And verily enough, that's really is what happened, right?
Yep.
Fast forward, God knows how many kajillion years. That's exactly what human beings are doing left, right, and center. Yep. They're creating corruption and they're causing bloodshed.
Yeah, so angels are going to God right now. Hey, I told you so.
I told you so.
Yeah. No, obviously. That's not the case.
But we really are doing that as human beings. And I feel that it is so heart-wrenchingly horrible that us, we humans, as the quote-unquote most superior creations of God, the creations when Allah designed, he went, فَتَبَارَكَ أَحْسَنَ الْخَالِقِينَ, you know? He said, praise be to me, I'm an awesome creator. We destroy so much.
Yeah, it's true. Unfortunately, it happens. But I want to associate myself to the other side of being a human being, which is how much good we do. You're looking at things from a very dark and gloomy perspective. And this is what the angels were doing. So you're on the angel side right now. I'm on God's side right now. I think God always wins. Truth comes and evil goes. So yeah, I'm on God's side here. That really, human beings have a really high potential. And what the angels saw over there was that ability of human beings to do so much evil because of their free will. Mm-hmm. But God was trying to say that, no, it's true that they have the ability to do that. But it's because they have that free will and they're able to do that. And because many of them will turn out not to use their free will to commit so much evil, that you will see that this creation of mine is going to shine way above you guys.
Mm.
Right? And that's what makes the verse very beautiful.
But they have squandered this potential. They have, many and they people always have, will yeah, throughout yeah. history. And when we look at the devastating state which the world is in right now, the world planet Earth, you know?
Yep.
How animals and the nature and even other human beings are being abused and exploited out of their resources, exhausted, absolutely exhausted out of their elements, minerals, and essentials. It's horrible, bro. Like, I don't even read the news or listen to the news anymore, whether it's about planet Earth, whether it's about global warming, whether it's about countries, or war, or elections for that matter, or even the virus, because then, I mean, I don't want to take it that dark, but I would be this close to putting a bullet through my head.
You're taking it quite dark now.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's very gloomy. It's very sad. There's a lot of evil happening.
Very gloomy and sad. It's devastating.
It's devastating.
It strips you of all faith toward humanity because I'm like, God, why are you still even bothering even?
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you can look at it that side. As I said, you're looking at it in a very gloomy way. I agree. There's a lot of evil happening. But on the other side, there's a lot of good happening. And we need
Such
as? Have you killed anybody before?
I cannot answer that question on live radio.
Obviously, you haven't, right? That would be the assumption. Basically, we see on a day-to-day basis very good human beings who do good things.
Like
who do a lot of good things.
Like what?
Like reach their potential.
Of being what?
Of being good human beings.
What is a good human being?
What is a good human being? A good human being is somebody who uses his free will and doesn't do evil when he's able to do it. And that can go from the smallest of things to, for example, you have the chance to, you know, prank someone. You're not going to prank them because you want to keep their dignity. To, for example, going and fighting the evil that you're just talking about, where, for example, you have oppressors who are killing everybody, and then you have some people who stand up against them and sacrifice everything, their families, their wealth, their own lives, to stop those evil people doing what they're doing. And that is the peak of being a human being, where you sacrifice everything you have for a greater cause. And we have these human beings out there. The unfortunate things about good people is that good people usually, in normal society, they don't shine out because normally they're humble, they hide themselves, they don't put themselves in the spotlight.
Yeah.
They're not never put in the spotlight. And those who are usually are often attacked by the evil people and wrong names and titles and things are attributed to them. And therefore, the good people usually in society don't shine that much, right? But when you look at it and when you pay a bit of attention, you see that there's so many good people doing really amazing stuff to help other
people.
What's
the point of the amazing thing that amazing people do if no one's heard about it and it doesn't seem like they're changing the current state of the world?
Of course, the world is changing and we can see the effect. Now, I don't want to make it too political and stuff.
I'm not even talking about the political aspect
of
things.
Of course,
well,
that's where you see it at a greater scale. You see, you're saying that what's the point of me, for example, feeding a poor person? Let him just die, right? No, that's a small scale. First of all, if you were to feed a poor person and to help him, that's in itself is a great act. The reason I'm going on a global level is because when you talk about politics and society, you're talking about having a global effect. And gloomy people will only give a value to something that has a global effect.
Of course.
Because small things don't really matter.
The devastation is on a global scale.
Exactly. So I'm going to say that you can even see on a political level where you have really amazing people who are going out of their way, okay, despite all the insults, despite the physical threats, despite being killed, they would go until the last breath to uphold those amazing human values which the angels couldn't see and which Allah could see. Right.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Unfortunately, however, I still feel that we are living during an era that injustice and bloodshed is prevailing rather than its opposite.
It's definitely happening. I'm not denying the fact that there's
okay,
a lot of problems.
Okay, now let's start with ourselves, all right? Obviously, we don't go around killing people, starving children, abusing women, hitting other human beings, unless there are siblings, in which case it's our God-given right.
I'm not your younger brother.
So am I, bro. So am I. We don't go doing these things, but how kind are we to nature? How conscious and mindful are we of the carbon footprint we leave behind ourselves? How mindful and aware are we of the vegetables and the meat and the dairy products that we receive and consume and how organic they are and whether there were any animals abused along the way?
Definitely, these are things we should take care of, and it's Islamic to take care of these things, right?
Talk to me about the Islamic aspect.
Yeah, so we have
care.
So in terms of resources, we have, for example, the famous Risalatul Huquq of Imam Sajjad, and then we have Treatise of Rights of Imam Sajjad, and then recently we have also, and I believe there's a show on IRIB English Radio on Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli's book Mafatihul Hayat, where he talks about these things, the rights of nature, the rights of animals, and all these kind of things. So this is a show that's worth looking into, Mafatihul Hayat. The program The Keys of Life in Arabic English Radio, it discusses in some parts of it, it should discuss that because it's there in the book. So we definitely have that. Let's assume these things hadn't come up, it's a very obvious thing that Allah expects us that when He gives us a blessing to take care of it and to act in a way that, you know, is responsible. Every blessing
but
comes with a responsibility.
I've actually seen a lot of Muslims with this negative and toxic mindset that, well, nature has been created at my disposal.
Yeah, at my disposal. It's a gift. It's a blessing, and you take care of your blessing, right? If somebody gives you a blessing, and then if somebody gives you a gift and you misuse it and you throw it back in the face of the person who gave it to you, that's not really grateful, and that's not what's expected from a good human being, right? So we obviously expect to take care of nature. And unfortunately,
I agree with that. It is very unfortunate, and I don't understand why. I mean, I am forever boggled by people, absolutely baffled, like mind-blown.
And I'm 10 times that.
With people who casually roll down the window and go...
And just throw, it's
throw
really,
their trash
really annoying.
Out onto the street, and I'm like... Did I just see what I thought I saw?
Now, I thought you were going to get worse than that. The worst thing is when you go up a mountain, you see that beautiful scenery, and you just see bottles and pack of crisps and all that, and you're like, come on. Like, you're not even enjoying the scene that you've come to see by throwing these things around, you know? It's really sad, but unfortunately, it's a mindset. It's a really bad mindset, definitely. And I think it's also laziness. I think people can't be bothered to, you know... There's a certain amount of laziness and maybe, I don't know... I don't want to be too strong, but a bit of arrogance that, you know, I don't want to keep trash in my own pocket or in my bag. You know, just get rid of it. You know, it's fine to have an empty bottle. Even if you pick it up from the floor, just put it in your bag. You'll throw it in a bin later. You know,
exactly.
It's not a big deal. Unfortunately, people have this kind of attitude, and it's not responsible, and we need to do something about it. But again, just because a lot of Muslims do it doesn't mean this is Islam's instruction or Islam not caring about it. Yeah, it's unfortunately a bad habit that Muslims and other people also have.
But let's look at the other aspect of how Islam and maybe perhaps some or most or all Muslims respect nature in that sense. I often see people, vegans, to be specific. Vegans going around talking regarding the fact that, it's so cruel and inhumane what y'all meat eaters do to nature and how you allow yourself to take the life of another living creature. And how is this cow any different from your pet cat?
Yeah, and how's the plant you're eating not living?
Exactly, there's
living.
That, you know?
No, look, we have to be serious. Like, we should stop going to extremes. A society that just goes from one extreme to another is really an unstable society.
And a society that lacks religion, because
yeah.
That's the whole point of religion, creating
exactly.
balance in our lives.
Exactly, yeah, definitely.
Because on one hand, Allah and the Ahadith from the Maslumin and the Quran tell us that we are allowed to consume certain meats, right?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, the one who created it.
And through procedures, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But on the other hand, Allah puts a bunch of other restrictions for us. Like, you're not allowed to abuse my nature like
yeah.
that and eat whatever you want.
Yeah. Not only eat whatever you want, even the thing you're going to eat, which I have allowed you to eat because it's mine, so I can do whatever I want, and I allow you to kill it. But I'm telling you to kill it in a specific way.
Exactly.
If you don't kill it in a specific way, that's gone meat for you. You're not
exactly.
allowed to
you're
eat it.
You're not allowed
it.
To eat that either.
Right?
So put yourself in check.
Exactly. So we should have that balance, basically. And like you said, Islam is there to give balance to our lives, to show us what is real, what is a good value against a wrong value. Sometimes, because of our ignorance, we might think something extreme to be good, whereas that extremeness of it is not a good thing. It's, again, bad.
Definitely.
So,
all right. So that's all the time we have for today's episode of Youth Station. I hope that this was a reminder for ourselves and to all our lovely listeners.
And I hope that you don't get depressed because of the gloominess of our host. Things are brighter than she's suggesting.
Lies. Oh, lies. Anyway, I hope this is a good reminder for ourselves and for our lovely listeners to reevaluate our lives and our decisions and how it's impacting Allah's precious, precious, beautiful nature. Until another episode of this show, I leave you in the care and protection of the Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Walaikum salam wa rahmatullah. See you in the next show.
I am what I am. Because you made, I have what I have. My love is strong. Because you are the one I call Creator, my Alpha and Omega, my Protector and my Maker. Because of you. I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker. Abiding in silence with patience and guidance, aware when I need you, a light when I seek you, justice, forgiveness, the strength in my love is strong. Because you are the one I call Creator, my Alpha and Omega, my Protector and my Maker. Because of
this is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Utilsat 3B and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.